Hi, you're listening to the Rick Rockhill podcast, and today's topic is all about diabetes, and I am a type 1 diabetic, so I thought I would share some insights and tips that I have on my life and my experiences. And it's worth mentioning at the onset here that everyone's a little different. Our bodies have different needs and different conditions and all these different things. So what I'm going to share with you is just kind of my experience and my opinions. And you should always, of course, check with your own doctor. So, gosh, diabetes, what a big deal it is now. It's become a huge problem in the world, in the country. It's one of the top 10 leading causes of death and all kinds of health conditions related to that, whether you're type 1 or type 2. Type 2, of course, is more common, but type 1 is a little different, but still dealing with a similar issue. Essentially, your pancreas isn't able to produce either enough or any natural insulin to manage the blood sugar levels. And whether you have diabetes or you think you have diabetes or you have a family member or friend, the purpose of this podcast is to share some information that may be helpful to you or to people you know who have diabetes. And so that's that. I would say to you that I'm a type 1 diabetic with late onset in the sense that I didn't know that I had diabetes until, you know, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I was misdiagnosed as a type 2 diabetic, which was a whole another story in and of itself. But I think the point is that the first tip I want to share with you, if you have a situation where you've either been diagnosed as pre-diabetic or diabetic, is number one is you need to insist on seeing an endocrinologist, because an endocrinologist is a specialist, somebody who can really, who they're trained just in the endocrine system, and their knowledge is so much deeper. I mean, my general practitioner, you know, doctor there, nice person and all, but essentially just said, okay, well, you know, you're a type 2 diabetic and need to watch out what you eat, and I'm going to put you on metformin. And that was it. I didn't really get a whole lot more. I would say he didn't seem especially concerned about it, and maybe it's because of where I was at that time. But it wasn't until later that I was having some problems with my blood sugar getting high and stuff that I had to go on insulin, and it then all of a sudden changed, and I had a whole range of things that went through my mind, and it was tough. Honestly, it was tough. And if you've been a diabetic or diagnosed for a while, then you'll know what I'm talking about. But for those of you who, if you're new to this, or if you're somebody who knows somebody with diabetes, I've got to tell you that all the things that they tell you could happen or might happen, or, you know, other complexities, they actually are real, in the sense that you do sort of have this sense of either a stigma, or then you're depressed, and then you're upset, and then you're irritable, and then you're this and you're that. So, I mean, all those things that they tell you, I remember distinctly saying, oh, that'll never happen to me. But this is just not a big deal. And it turns out it did. I needed help. And, you know, I think it's great if you have friends you can talk to, or family members, people who are willing to listen and be there for you, because it helped me a lot having people to talk to. But the most important thing is getting an endocrinologist. My endo, the very first meeting she had with me, she looked at my blood results and the last whatever many number of A1Cs, and she looked at my blood meter and looked at how my patterns were. And right away, she said, I don't think you're a type 2 diabetic. I think you're type 1. Has anyone ever tested you? And of course, nobody had. And so she insisted on doing a test. And it turns out, yep, I was type 1. So what did all that mean? Well, it changed the diagnosis. The diagnosis, therefore, changed the treatment. And I was put on two types of insulin at that time. And I was injecting myself with a long-acting insulin for those, like, you know, 10 or 12-hour periods, and I'd had rapid-acting insulin or quick-acting insulin for meals, and I had to deal with that. And, you know, I think it's interesting that although my endocrinologist was terrific, or is she is a really great doctor, the whole process of being put on insulin was pretty limited, in the sense that I didn't really have a lot of training. I'm not blaming anybody. It's just I was very fortunate because I happen to have a friend who as a pharmacist and in the medical field and was specialized in diabetes. And so he was able to show me, like, you're doing that wrong. You know, did anyone ever teach you how you're supposed to be, you know, insert the needle into yourself? And I said, no. So I think, you know, I learned luckily because someone helped me and it was a little better than what I was doing. But if I hadn't been fortunate, then I would not have known that I was doing some of these things incorrectly. So it affects you and your care of yourself. So I think my second tip, first one is to see an endocrinologist. Second tip is do your research, read up, go to forums, find other people who are dealing with it. If you have the ability to ask a nurse or ask questions, do so. Little things about the angle at which you inject the insulin can make a difference in how well your body takes it and absorbs it. But anyhow, the point of this podcast today is I want to share with you my experience and what changed was kind of like the turning point for me with managing my diabetes. And of course, if you know, we don't know that, you know, the most important thing at a really high level here with diabetes is what you eat, because it is all about you're managing your diet. You have to be disciplined. There's no way you can be healthy as a diabetic if you're not disciplined in everything you do. So what are the steps to manage your diabetes? Well, first step is you need to have awareness and know what your glucose levels are. So when you're diagnosed with diabetes, your doctor will give you or set you up to have a meter where you check your blood, these little finger sticks, you prick your finger, you put the blood on the little strip and it tells you the blood glucose level. And it's critical that you do that. Now, your doctor will tell you how often you should be checking your blood. And typically it's, you know, well, depending on your condition, they'll either be before or after your meals or sometimes both. But it's critical that you know what your blood sugar is and then how your body reacts after you've eaten. So usually 2 or 3 hours after you've eaten, they tell you to check your blood. But it also varies on the type of food you eat. So if you have a meal that's maybe a lot of fats in it, you know, cheese and so forth, certain foods will digest longer and your insulin will have a different reaction in terms of how long it takes for it to kick in. Or you could have a very high carb meal and, you know, maybe you didn't do a good job planning your meal and you had something like, say, mashed potatoes, right? And you get a spike right away. So understanding the type of foods you eat, the portion size that you've eaten is also an impact on how your blood sugar will actually go up, how high it goes up and how fast. So knowing that is critical. And so you have to first understand your glucose levels. The second thing is then my food, what I'm putting into my body. So if you know what your levels are, then you have the ability to plan your meals a little differently. And the bottom line is you have to learn how to count your carbs. There's lots of tools out there. I actually downloaded an app called Glucose Buddy. There's a bunch of different ones out there and they help you. You can look up things, especially handy if you're out eating out somewhere. Some restaurants have their data actually in those apps. So, you know, it'll come up as nutrition verified, but it gets you closer if you don't know. There are lots of little tricks of the trade. You know, for example, in the palm of your hand, the palm is about the size of a 6 ounce piece of, say, fish or chicken or meat. So you can use that. I mean, 6 ounces is, believe it or not, that's the proper portion size for protein. And, you know, when you go out to a restaurant, they have a 14 ounce steak or a 24 ounce steak, you need to like just walk away from that. And everything you're doing has to be within reason. So I bought a scale. I bought a food scale, went to Bed Bath and Beyond, and that helped me tremendously in even just educating myself on what the proper portions are. I even, weigh out things and I'll allow myself to eat certain bad things, you know, meaning like pasta, but I weigh it and, you know, you think, okay, well, I can only eat 2 ounces and that's what I have to eat. And it may only be 14 penne, but that's the amount I can eat that I don't go crazy with my glucose levels. So anyway, this idea of knowing your blood sugar, knowing your food, counting your carbs are critical. Whether you're injecting yourself with insulin or you're using some new technology like an insulin pump, you still have to count your carbs. That'll never change. So I think, you would be well, educated there. this whole idea of diabetes and pre-diabetes, check out this PSA.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have pre-diabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, three more fingers for everyone over 60, two over 50, one over 40, one more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, two if you're very overweight, and three if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio pre-diabetes test. And if you're holding up five or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
So there's a lot of education that needs to happen with people about diabetes, but it is a struggle and managing it is tough, but it is manageable. But this idea about staying healthy is a full-time job. And as I mentioned earlier, what you're eating, your family history, how your body reacts are all critical things, and properly managing insulin, dosing it is good. But I can tell you that anyone who's using insulin, it's tough. If you travel, if you work, if you go out to a restaurant, you have to drag all your supplies around and your needles and your alcohol swabs, and you have to excuse yourself, go to the bathroom, and undress and insert and jerk your insulin, all that stuff. It's a lot, right? So for me, when my doctor started talking to me about an insulin pump, I was intrigued, but I was really freaked out, to be honest with you. It was a head game for me. And I didn't understand. I didn't really know. I guess I wasn't smart enough to go look on YouTube and see just what insulin pumps were. But I was resisting it because I thought, I don't want to be attached to some machine. I was, for some crazy reason, I was thinking it was like a surgical implant. And I don't know. I had a hard time getting around to it. But eventually, what prompted me to make the change was I went into my doctor for my typical checkup. And she was like, well, how's it going? Your blood sugar is not too bad. Your A1C is looking good. And she started looking at my history of my meter. And she saw that I had a lot of lows. And she asked me about that. And she said, what is this that's going on? I mean, your blood sugar is not high, so I'm not concerned. You're doing a great job. But why do you have all these lows? And I started to tell her that I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would be at 50, 45, and I'd be sweating and I'd be dizzy or lightheaded or whatnot. And I started telling her this, and she saw some of them where I had checked my blood sugar. And she told me something that really woke me up. And she said, high blood sugar is bad, but of course you don't notice those things because it takes a long time for you to do the damage at the cellular or macro level, so microcellular level, because it is sort of, it's a buildup, right? So, but you're not having a problem with your highs. She goes, but all it takes with your lows is one bad crash to kill you. And when she told me that, I didn't realize. I thought it was okay to be low. I didn't understand it. And she's like, no, you could have a stroke. You could not wake up. You could fall and hit your head and then cause other damage. So I didn't realize that. So she told me that, this is really your problem. And for me, for my body, the long-acting insulin was a problem. Time managing that. And so she recommended that I go on an insulin pump. So I did my research with my healthcare insurance company, and I found that there are a couple out there, and they didn't, there's lots of them on the market. I only looked at the two that we had through our insurance company, which were Medtronic and Tandem. Those are the two options. And so I realized they're expensive. So I actually chose to bump up my health insurance plan to one of the highest levels, because it covered 90% of an insulin pump if I did that. So I first made that decision so I could afford it. Then when the time was right, I said, okay, I'm in. And it really made a big difference for me. I didn't realize, I don't know why I waited so long to get on an insulin pump. And I'd like to tell you a little more about that experience. I'm gonna take a very quick break, a couple of messages, and we'll be right back.
I rescue around 75 to 100 dogs a year. A lot of these dogs that come to me are very malnourished.
extremely stressed, and they're overall just not healthy. A friend of mine reached out to me who's been in the pet industry for well over 30 years, and he told me he was developing a new dog food dedicated to gut health. I'm in an industry where seeing is believing, and as a rescuer, I make sure the first step in the process is these dogs get as healthy as they could possibly be. Now all my dogs eat Lucy pet food.
I'm Haley Kiyoko, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now is the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
And we're back. This is the Rick Rockhill podcast talking about diabetes. And I was just telling you about my insulin pump. And when I got on the, I chose the Tandem X2 Slim. I like that model because it was able to be updated through the internet. It's pretty slick. But anyway, with that insulin pump comes a CGM, a continuous glucose monitor. And what's nice about that is, unlike when you're using the finger sticks, you just check it a couple times a day, maybe four or five, six times a day before or after meals and such. A CGM is something you put on your body and it stays there for 10 days or something, and it checks your blood automatically every 5 minutes. You don't even know that it's happening. And it sends that signal by Bluetooth to your insulin pump, and also to, if you download the app on your phone, you can have readings on there too. So it's actually very cool. But the insulin pump is great because You set it up, it gets programmed, so it knows what your baseline level of insulin needs are. And if you're a type 1 diabetic and your body's not producing any insulin naturally, your doctor will do that, so your pump will give it to you automatically. You still bolus, so before a meal, you would count your carbs, you'd punch it in, and then it would essentially give you the dose you need. But the great thing about the insulin pump is now they have these technology. The new update we had in January is this predictive control IQ technology, they call it. So it actually uses the data points from the CGM and it looks at the trend. So whether you're looking at your phone or the insulin pump itself, it's telling you if it's going up rapidly or it's stable or it's declining or declining rapidly. But the pump will then adjust. And so it'll turn itself off, stop dispensing insulin if you're dropping, or if it finds that maybe you just didn't count correctly and you didn't give yourself enough insulin before your meal, it'll kick in and give you a bit extra because it'll predict where your glucose levels will go to in say 20 minutes. So it's actually a very cool technology on the insulin pumps. And I'll tell you, I don't know why I waited so long. I highly recommend it. So, but whether or not you're able to do that, it's still the most important thing you can do is to understand your relationship with food, and really educating yourself on different types of food is critical. So you need to do the research about how foods digest. It's not hard to get. It can be, a little hard at first, but I find that, I typically eat the same things quite often. And once you get the hang of it, you really know right away that, this meal is 26 carbs and that meal is going to be 35 carbs. And I know how to split things up. So certain things will be 80% of the insulin I'll take now. And you can program that on the pump. You know, if you compare injecting yourself with insulin versus an insulin pump, okay, when you inject yourself, you're basically dosing that whole amount of insulin right now. With an insulin pump, you have the ability to program it. So for example, let's say for dinner last night, I had a 6 ounce chicken breast and I had some broccoli and I had some maybe cannelloni beans. Okay. I know that the chicken will take 2 hours to really convert to energy. And I know that the cannelloni beans will start to digest right away. They will slow down and drag out a little bit too. But I'm able to program the pump to say, give me 80%, maybe 60% now, and 40% for 3 hours can I can tell them 2.5 hours. Yeah. So actually, it is tailored to food that I need and very different when it's all there. So, you know, it's harder if you're doing, if you're not using a pump. And I would just tell you that it made a big difference in my life. Having Tandem, Slim, and the Dexcom G6PM made a big difference. Forget the supply, it's not hard to do it all. You just have to, you know, just make sure you have extra supplies with you. From a life lifestyle standpoint, I mean, basically put this thing on the CGM that goes on every 2 days, move it, put a new device on, and then on the pump every 3 days. So you fill the pump with insulin for 3 days amount, and then you put it into your body, and then it's a little applicator that you just snap it in there, and then it goes on like with some what looks like medical tape. It automatically is there. And then you just attach the tube and you're done. And then 3 days later, you move it to the part of your body. So if you need to shower, if you want to go swimming, if you, you know, you can still be active. You can turn the pump off for a little while and disconnect it. That's no problem. When you sleep at night, I just wear PJs with a pocket, and I put the pump right in the pocket, and I sleep all night fine with it. So you know, the insulin pump itself is very easy to work with. And I find that when I travel, when I go out of town, I'll always take an extra setup of everything just in case. Not only if I need to replace it naturally, but if I, you know, maybe I accidentally ripped it, you know, I could do that if you make a mistake or something. So I would have backup of supplies with 1 or 2 days of application. So the pumps are easy to work with. I think it makes a huge difference in managing your life as a diabetic. But there are lots of resources out there. And I think my advice would be to go to things like diabetes.org, which is the American Diabetes Association. You can subscribe to Diabetes Magazine. There's other newsletters online you can get right to your mailbox every day or every week. And those have good tips. And I think even, you know, whether it's Twitter or Pinterest or Facebook, find a group of people who talk about this. And I have to tell you that I was somebody on YouTube whose video I watched. I think it was a kid who was a type 1 diabetic who got an insulin pump. And I sort of laid my fears to rest and my stress about it by watching a youngster just very nonchalantly put their insulin pump on and do the whole thing and go out and play. And I realized that if this kid can do it, so can I. You know, I was able to just kind of move on. So the point is a support group. Find your information and learn from other people. Talk about it. Get your concerns out there and find other people who are willing to share their experiences with you. I definitely can say that my whole relationship with food is different than it used to be. But I did also get a great tip from my endocrinologist, which was, make your lifestyle changes sustainable. So you have to be able to keep that lifestyle up over time. And I'm the kind of person, I have a sweet tooth, so I really like to have sweets or a piece of candy or something. So I can't eat what I used to, but it's all about planning your meals and so forth. And my endo said to me that, look, you know, provided that your sugar is still in check and you're generally healthy and you're doing well, you still have dessert once in a while. But when the dessert comes, cut it in quarters and just have the discipline to only eat a quarter of it, a portion of it. And even at home, if you decide, okay, I'm going to have a little bit of ice cream in the summer, you could do a small scoop. You don't have to have a huge portion. So that is a sustainable lifestyle choice, because it's not practical to say, I'm going to cut out all carbohydrates or cut out all sugar or sweets. I mean, that's not practical. But, you know, if you do that, you just have to have the discipline. You can't keep eating those. You have to say, great, I had that little treat and I'm good now. What it does is it allows you to still be happy, to satisfy your urges and needs, and you plan your meals accordingly. So remember that when you're diabetic, it does require that you know different types of food. If I were to give you any advice, you know, the whole podcast I could do on food, but time for that here. But if I were to give you a piece of advice about food, number one, if you can, you're better off to eat all your meals at home than to eat out. Okay. Now, obviously, there are times when you have to eat out, but I'm saying as a general rule of thumb, you should try to make a lifestyle choice of eating at home. Second thing would be buy fresh food. Try not to eat anything out of a package, because anything that's boxed has lots of preservatives in it. You know, they're usually pretty heavy in carbs and not the right carbs either. So you need to just, you know, think about making fresh food and eat more vegetables. By that, I mean green vegetables are good, better. I would also say too that you probably should, there are some things you really should give up or significantly cut back on. So anything like mashed potatoes, french fries, pasta, white bread. If it's white, you should really cut way back. Things you can do alternatively are maybe brown rice, sweet potatoes instead of white potatoes. So you can have whole wheat bread. Now be careful with breads, because lots of times you'll see wheat bread and it's only a little bit of wheat and it's still a lot of white bread in there, a white flour. And that's going to hurt your blood sugar, you know, drive it up too high. So sometimes I buy like the Dave's Killer Bread. They have the thin sliced whole wheat bread. And I like that because one slice is only 10 carbs and I can have a sandwich and it's not so bad. So, you know, those are the kinds of things, like even just the portion size, the skinnier slice of bread helps a little bit. So rather than the whole wheat slice of bread, that's the regular size loaf, that's like 17 carbs per slice, I can have the skinny slice of bread and it's only 10 carbs. So that's, you know, it gives me the urge, the satisfying the urge of a sandwich, but not overloading on the carbs. So as I said, there are some foods you really do need to cut out. But all in all, if you just cut back on those, you'll be better off. So I can say to you that my tips for healthy living really are: talk to your endocrinologist, get on an insulin pump if you qualify, use a CGM. Knowing your blood sugar levels and how well you do makes a huge difference. And really, portion control is the most important thing you can do. Definitely sleep, get your exercise, even if you're just the kind of person you don't want to go to the gym and you're not ready to do that. Walk a lot, go outside, get fresh air. You know, you have to figure out how to do it. If you're in a cold climate, go to the mall and walk around, but you need exercise. And I think that staying mentally healthy is important. So talking about these things to friends, family members, find people who are sympathetic to that. But you definitely need to understand your body and find people who can help you, give you the kind of advice. And you deserve the very best medical care. So insist on that endocrinologist to study your patterns in your blood and so forth. So anyway, those are my tips for healthy living. Just a quick podcast here. And I'm hoping that this is of some inspiration to you. And for more information, again, go on to diabetes.org. You can find a lot of information right there, everything from nutrition, fitness, how you can get involved, understanding your A1C and what that means. I mean, it's all pretty important for you to learn. I would say to you that an insulin pump is expensive, but you will find that the quality of your life will dramatically improve. So I wish you lots of luck, and I'll probably do another podcast on the food portion, because I think a lot of people would probably benefit from that. So thanks again. Until next time, I appreciate you listening, and have a great day.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. That means it could be you, your best man, your worst man. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org to know where you stand. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I rescue around 75 to 100 dogs a year. A lot of these dogs that come to me are very malnourished, they're extremely stressed, and they're overall just not healthy. A friend of mine reached out to me who's been in the pet industry for well over 30 years, and he told me he was developing a new dog food dedicated to gut health. I'm in an industry where seeing is believing, and as a rescuer, I make sure the first step in the process is these dogs get as healthy as they could possibly be. Now all my dogs eat Lucy pet food.